Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
It's the Spring Member Drive at NPR. Donate today to Power Public Radio for all at nprnews.org. Good morning, everyone. This is NPR News, and I'm Angela Davis. Thanks for listening. Today is the second day of our Spring Member Drive, and it is also Pay It Forward Friday at NPR, as I'm sure you've heard. So for every donation today, you'll be able to help refugee children. So for every contribution we receive today, we will send a kids' play kit to a child displaced by war, famine, or natural disasters from our partnership with Alight. Alight is a Minnesota-based organization that serves displaced families around the globe. So make your gift go further today. Donate now. Become a member now at nprnews.org, or you can call us at 800-227-2811. Well, have you heard? Have you felt it? The weather is finally warming up, and that means it is time for one of Minnesota's great traditions. I am talking about fishing. Next weekend is the official kickoff to the fishing season here in Minnesota with the Governor's Fishing Opener. This year, it's taking place on a lake on the Leech Lake Reservation on Saturday, May 14th. It is the start of the fishing season for walleye, northern pike, and sauger. Minnesota boasts about 1.4 million licensed anglers each year, and every year they get out to those Minnesota lakes and rivers and streams to cast their lines and catch some fish. So this hour, I want to talk about that. I'm talking about why fishing is so special to Minnesotans, how to get started if you are a beginner, and state efforts to make fishing more accessible for everybody. Let's bring in our guests. Right now on the line, I have Benji Cohn, and Benji is the Fish and Wildlife Outreach Mentor Network Coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Good morning to you, Benji.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Can you tell me, I'm a little excited about the change in the weather. I think a lot of people are.
I think you're in the vast majority of Minnesotans at this point. So
I need to start with the work that you do. You have a very fancy title there, Outreach Mentor Network Coordinator for the state's Fish and Wildlife Division for the DNR. So, Benji, what do you do? What does your work involve?
Well, you were just talking about people, the long tradition of fishing and fish and wildlife. We work with hunting and fishing dollars to improve our hunting and fishing opportunities across the state. And one of my jobs in the outreach section is to inform people about these opportunities and help them get out there and enjoy them. So that's what I'm working on.
And I moved to Minnesota in 1994, and it was very clear to me very early on, it was summertime, that fishing is a huge part of the culture here in Minnesota. So tell me more about that. What makes fishing so special, do you think, to folks here?
It's just a great pastime. It's a great way to get outside and spend some time with family and friends. We have, as we know this year especially, we've had a very long winter, and there's nothing better than getting a nice warm day like this weekend and getting outside and enjoying the sunshine and enjoying some open water for a change. So it's a great pastime. This is the 74th Governor's Fishing Opener this year. Mm-hmm. So it's been going on for a lot of years, and people love it. It's kind of like the kickoff to our summer season and tourist season. So
right. And we have, as I mentioned, not just lakes, but also streams and rivers across the state. And I think, is that part of the reason that we have often been able to boast that our state has more fishing licenses per capita of any state in the country? Is that still true?
You know, that's one of those weird statistics. I'm not for sure that's totally true or not. Per capita, I think the last thing I saw, we were in the top five. But we have, there are states like California and Alaska that do have a lot more people, or a lot more people that specifically fish, that kind of outdo us here and there. But we do have one of the best fisheries, especially in the upper Midwest, with over 4,500 fishing lakes and 3,800 miles of trout streams and almost 16,000 miles of streams and rivers across the state that we can get out and enjoy. So there's a lot of people that are out there enjoying it. And I think boat sales in Minnesota, we run right around the top across the country too. So
a personal question, what are some of your favorite memories of fishing when you were growing up, when you were a young Benji? What were you doing out there?
I was telling Samantha this story yesterday, that one of my favorite memories doesn't have anything to do with catching fish, but I was out, I was probably 12, 13 years old, and we had some friends that had a boat on the Mississippi River. I grew up not far from the Mississippi, so we decided to take the weekend and go out in the boat and do some fishing with my dad and my friends and his dad, and we were just trolling for some walleye, and I snagged something, and it was big. And you know how you get that, I don't know if you ever sang anything big, you know, sometimes it's a stick, but your heart gets pounding, right? It's just the excitement. And so we stopped the boat, and Harold's trying to reel around, and I think we have a snag, and I'm pulling, and I'm like, it's moving, it's something big. And we pulled it up, and me being kind of a bike nerd, I love to bike, and Minnesota offers some great bike trails too, I pulled up a 1952 Schwinn kickback two-speed bike. So that's one of the most memorable things I've ever caught.
Did that, like, what did that do to your fishing equipment? Did you actually get it all? I mean, did you just pull it to the surface?
It did bend the hooks on the lure. So that was kind of junk after that, but it was a small sacrifice. I actually pulled the bike out. I had a friend that owned the bike shop at that time and was able to help me locate some parts, and I got it all put back together and repainted, and it's still hanging in my garage. I still ride it every year.
Wow. That's a twofer. That's a great story, Benji. But some important things you said there. First thing you said a childhood memory, and you said you had friends who had a boat. Now, is that a very common experience for people who, as adults who are fishing now, that there is a childhood memory that someone took them fishing as a child, and that was the beginning of it?
I think so. You know, and I think it's probably declining a little bit with, you know, all the people moving to Minnesota, the new populations that are coming in. They maybe don't have that memory, or maybe they have it from a different place. But across the state, you know, there's still a lot of people that love our lakes and rivers and get out there every year and know people with boats. There's a lot of them around. So I think that's a pretty common way to learn. Especially those of us like myself at a certain age, that's kind of what we did in the summers. We spent a lot of time out there. So,
well, I spent a lot of time on this show talking about how the state is changing. And as we talk about new populations and people who are moving to Minnesota, tell me about the work that the DNR is doing to try to get more people involved in fishing.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're always trying to get more people involved in fishing. It's how our agency is funded and how all the great work that we do is funded. So one of, I think, the coolest things we've done in the last couple years is translating our fishing and hunting regulations into other languages. So we now, among English, we also have Hmong, Karen, Somali, and Spanish available for people. And that's been a huge help. Just being able to get out there and read the regulations in your language. And it, as you probably know, regulations aren't the easiest thing to read. Mm-hmm. So we've been working to kind of simplify them a little bit, and then, you know, putting them in their native language has been a big help. So,
and so, do you have some information about, like, the demographics of people who have fishing licenses? I talked about a number, 1.4 million, I think, was the most recent number of how many anglers in Minnesota have fishing licenses. Is there more information about these folks? Who are they?
You know, I wish we could tell you, but that's not a question we ask when people buy licenses. We don't ask any ethnicity questions. We do know that females are a growing percentage of the population, and some younger people are a growing percentage of the population, but we don't have that broke down into, you know, anything farther than that. So I would think, just being out there and working with people in the public, that, you know, I run into a lot of people. I'm a fly angler. I love to trout fish, and I run into a lot more diverse crowd now than I did 10, 15 years ago, which is awesome.
So what do we know about some of the barriers to fishing? I would imagine one of the barriers would be the gear. So what if you don't have fishing gear? Are there places where you can borrow it?
We've made great strides across Minnesota in trying to get people out there. So we offer, you know, not only us as an agency, but we have a lot of nonprofit organizations that are out there doing programs. They have equipment, they have the knowledge, they know where to go. They're working with school groups. They're doing, you know, St. Paul, Minneapolis both do public fishing events on, I'm going to mess up the dates, but it's like the second Tuesday and the second Thursday or something of the month. In their local parks, or people can just come out and try this. We also do free fishing days, one in the summer and one in the winter. This weekend, actually, it's going to be beautiful outside, and it's take a mom fishing weekend. So you can get out there if you're a resident mom in the state of Minnesota. You can get out there and fish for free this weekend. It's going to be a good time, and it's supposed to be warm. We also offer in our state parks free fishing equipment. You can come in and just borrow equipment, or you can also, in some of the parks, sign up for our I Can Fish program. So you get a 2-hour window where they teach you how to tie knots and how to rig your poles and kind of the basics of fishing, and then let you fish out there and help you out and how to take fish off the hook and all that fun stuff. So
Benji, are you talking about within the state park system that there are programs in place where there are lessons and there's fishing gear as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, in the state park system. And also, I always encourage people to check out their county parks, because a lot of them do stuff like that also. And we've, you know, since the pandemic hit, we shifted our outreach efforts. Advocacy outreach implies we're out there in the public. We weren't able to do that, so we started a program. I think it's pretty neat. It's called the Minnesota Outdoor Skills and Stewardship Series. So every week on Wednesdays over the lunch hour, we hit a different topic just to introduce people to, you know, kind of what they're missing, or if they're already involved in the outdoors, what they could be doing to try something different or to help out. So, you know, this past Wednesday, we did a talk on wild rice management, which is a pretty big topic in Minnesota. And this coming Wednesday, we have, I think there's 4 or 5 of us, we're getting on and we're just talking about our favorite fishing lures. And I'm not going to tell the bike story.
So, now, you mentioned,
have to tune in to hear a different one.
You mentioned women and fishing. And so what do we know about women and fishing? Because I know that there are groups of women who've been fishing together and trying to get more women involved in fishing. And are you seeing an increase in that as well?
Oh, definitely. I think across not just fishing, but across the outdoors industry and hunting, too, women are probably the fastest growing segment right now. And, it's women from all over. And it's great. We have some great women angling groups. You know, I work with a women's fly fishing group, and there's a women anglers in Minnesota that are out there, and they're very active. They have a large membership, and they promote getting out there. They give opportunities to do tournaments. They fish year round, ice fishing, summer fishing. They're actually, I think some of them, they have an event for Take a Mom Fishing Weekend this weekend. Mm-hmm. It's a growing interest, and women are enjoying the sport, you know, kind of like we did when we were kids. You're taking your kids out there and you're enjoying it. And,
because as women, that's what we do. We just get it done, right?
Yeah. you go out there and get
good
it done.
Good answer, Benji. So for someone who is new to fishing and wants to get into it, Benji, what advice do you have for them? I imagine it starts with getting a fishing license, right?
Yes. And especially if you're older, if you're 16 older, you need a fishing license.
16.
So, or, okay. You know, there's opportunities like I was talking about earlier with our state parks to get in there and fish for free and free fishing weekends, or take a mom fishing weekend. We also do some great educational programs through our bowl program or Become an Outdoor Woman program. And some of those events, you don't require to have a fishing license. So if you want to come out and just try it out, we get a permit that allows you to come and fish and try it out for the day at these events, that just to get you introduced. So.
Okay, my ears popped up, and I'm looking at the our engineer and the show producer, all women. Become an Outdoor Woman. Tell me more about this, Benji. What does that involve?
It's a fantastic program. It was actually started in Wisconsin. It's run nationwide. The DNR hosts the one in Minnesota here. Linda Bylander, excuse me, is our coordinator. But she does programs all across the state.
So classes and different things like what? Fishing, but other stuff too?
You know what? See, I'm going to draw a blank here, put me pressure on me.
Okay.
I know they do it. They're doing a turkey hunting class,
ooh,
fishing classes. Mm-hmm. She's actually doing a beaning walleye talk on our moss program that I mentioned earlier in, I believe, 2 weeks.
Yeah. So
with one of her great volunteers. And then they're doing they do a walleye fishing class after that. So you can listen to the presentation, learn a little bit, and then potentially join a class to get out and try it with a bunch of other like-minded women.
And when I find this on the DNR website, some of the programs and activities you've been talking about for children and for women and for everybody.
Yeah. If you go on the DNR website, a great place to start is our Learn to Fish pages. So if you go on there, you can look up any fish species you want and look at locations and tips and tricks, how to catch them and seasons and all that stuff. It's a great resource.
So Sunday is Mother's Day, but you've mentioned a couple of times that this weekend is also Take a Mom Fishing Weekend. Will that be fun? If my kids would like to take me fishing, will I have a good time, Benji?
Of course you'll have a good time.
I would like to maybe go to a restaurant, but you say you can take a mom fishing. Will the moms like this?
There's actually places like John mentioned, Lake of the Woods up there. There's great resorts up there where you can actually go out and catch a fish and then bring it back to the restaurant and they'll cook it and clean it for you and feed you.
I like that.
Maybe you don't have the opportunity to do that, but if your kids are a little bit older, they can probably help you catch a fish and then sit you down with your favorite beverage and cook and clean that fish for you and then serve you a great dinner.
That sounds good.
Wonderful experience.
You sold that. I like that. And with regard to the Governor's Fishing Opener next weekend, Saturday the 14th, tell us a little bit about where that's happening and some of the events surrounding that, because I always know that's a big deal in Minnesota, the fishing opener with the governor in attendance.
Yes, it is a big deal. We have a lot of media that come up there. Actually, just this past week, they did a roundtable on the state of fishing in Minnesota. Like we've mentioned, Take 'Em Out Fishing Weekend this weekend. This year, it's going to be up on Lake Winnebagoche, hosted in conjunction with Explore Minnesota Tourism, the Chippewa National Forest, and the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. But they'll have a media event on Friday. Of course, the big opener on Saturday morning. We get out there, we do a shore lunch, just to get people involved. And across the state of Minnesota, like you mentioned, we get almost 1.9 million licenses sold across the state of Minnesota. It's a $2.4 billion industry in Minnesota and supports 28,000 jobs. Mm-hmm. It's a mm-hmm. big deal.
Now, the spring has been unseasonably cold. That's a polite way to describe the weather we've had. How do you think that's going to affect the fishing season as well as the fishing opener? Is there anything we can take from that we've been, so the temperature has been so cool for so long?
I think we have such a great state all over. There's so much available water, the 4,500 lakes and the 16,000 miles of streams and rivers, there's open water to be had. So there is going to be lakes out there that are still froze over and we're not going to be able to get out and fish for opener. Mm-hmm. As for affecting the fishing going forward in the season, I don't think it's going to have a long-term effect at all.
Mm-hmm. So this coming week will be, it'll be very critical. The weather forecast, I think Monday is the day we're looking for temperatures maybe in the 80s. So this warm up we're seeing in the week ahead could be significant in terms of, what we will be able to do in terms of fishing in a week from now.
Yeah. Yeah. When that ice starts melting, it melts fast. So it starts breaking up and, we could get a few 80-degree days in northern Minnesota, and we could have some open water all over the place. So it'll be great.
That's good. So let's talk about walleye. We know that Minnesota is really well known for its walleye. What can you tell us about walleye, both fishing for it and maybe just even, and eating it and its popularity here in Minnesota?
It's been popular forever in Minnesota. It's a state fish. So it's an abundant fish. It's, a weight flaky fish. So it eats very well. They're fun to catch. So they're great. They're not, necessarily really hard to catch. People catch them in the winter. They catch them in the summer. Next week we got five of us on there and talking about our favorite fishing lures, and we're going to cover a couple ways to catch them just with a simple jigging rig to catch walleye or live bait to catch walleye. So
any suggestions that you can share now about, you know, some attractive lures for walleye?
I'm a jigging guy. I like it in the winter. I like, you know, kind of bobbing in a canoe or a small boat and just jigging for walleye. A lot of people troll for walleye. They'll use a live bait rig where they're using shiner minnows on there. So it's to each their own preference. So like I said earlier, I'm kind of a fly guy. So I like to get out. I don't fly fish for walleye too much, but I like to get out, especially this weekend. If it's nice out, I will be out chasing the smaller panfish with flies. And I don't have to, because my wife loves it when I bring stinky worms and bait home and leave them in the refrigerator too long. So,
and what are some of the other fish that are common here in our lakes and streams in Minnesota?
You know, I think we have, it's right around 162 species of fish in Minnesota. So there's a huge variety. This weekend, it's kind of a misnomer. It's take a mom fishing weekend. Typically falls on the opener weekend, but it's in statute. And I'll get the language wrong, but it's a certain Saturday before Memorial Day. So it's last year and this year, it's a week before. But everybody always forgets about, you know, panfish and rough fish that are open for fishing year round in Minnesota. And springtime's a great time to target those fish too. So typically they're in shallower waters. They come up for spawning. They're fairly easy to catch. You know, you live in the metro area like I do. We have a great program called Fishing in the Neighborhood, or FIN program. We actually put out a little book. It's on our website. You can go on there and it'll show all the lakes that are specifically stocked for the FIN program. They're stocked with easily catchable small fish, sunfish, and they all have docks. They're easily accessible all across the metro area. So,
and Benji, are you any good at cooking fish?
I wouldn't say I'm really good at it, but I've been known to cook some fish.
All right. Well, I want to thank our guests from the Department of Natural Resources for talking to us about fishing today. We've been talking with Benji Cohn, the Fish and Wildlife Outreach Mentor Network Coordinator for the DNR. And a reminder that we do have the Governor's Fishing Opener taking place on Saturday, May 14th, next weekend, there on a lake on the Leech Lake Reservation. Thank you, Benji, for your time. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
We are talking about fishing this hour, and I have another guest joining us now. Bradley Harrington is a tribal liaison for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and he's on the line right now. Welcome to the program, Bradley.
Ani and Angela.
Hi, good morning. So what is the significance of fishing for you personally? What does fishing mean to you, Bradley?
Well, fishing means to me, as I've been learning more about my Anishinaabe people, is that there is a great respect between me and the fish. And as they give their life for me, they're, you know, supplying me with physical nutrients for my body, but they also supply me with spiritual nutrients as well that help build me up and keep my spirit well.
I love that. I want to talk about fishing history here in Minnesota. Until 1999, indigenous people in Minnesota could be arrested for spearfishing. And the U.S. Supreme Court case, Minnesota versus Mille Lacs Band of Chippewa Indians, changed that. And so, Bradley, will you take a few minutes here and explain that case to listeners who are not familiar with it at all?
Okay, yeah, so the signing of the treaties of 1837, 1855, and the various other treaties, what I say is that the state of Minnesota, the whole state, has a treaty tied to it every square inch. And for the sake of the 1837 treaty, there was very specific language put on there about the tribe retaining rights. So if we listen to the tribe's retaining rights, so if we hear that out, retaining, a good question that one of my Nijis always says is, who has treaty rights? And, you know, the most common answer is that tribal people do. Well, and in actuality, tribal people have inherent rights, and they may be waived in a treaty, or they may be recognized, retained in a treaty. But those inherent rights have always been there. Matter of fact, it's the Americans, the non-tribal people, that are granted rights by treaties to occupy space, ceded territory, and so it's a different perspective. When the treaty court case started, I was about 11 years old, going to school. You know, I really didn't know too much about it, right? I didn't mm-hmm. know much other than, you know, it was something that was...
There's a dispute.
Yeah, there mm-hmm. was something going on, and I was doing my best as a youngster to make sense of it. As I got older, more and more information was coming out, and I actually didn't spear or net a fish until, well, I was like 19, 20 years old. To the case itself, the treaty rights case, it was going up asking the question, do the tribes retain rights, even though it explicitly said it in the treaty? Do the tribes still retain those rights? And it still came down to a vote to 5-4 on whether or not it said retention of rights. So
Bartley, what we're talking about, this dispute, the dispute had to do with a question of whether Indigenous folks should be spearfishing and the impact of that, whether that was depleting lakes of you know, fish, so that when other folks would come fishing, that there just weren't as many in the lake. Is that sort of what this whole the battle was about?
That's how it was painted, right? And the other way it was painted was that we have a different group of people doing different things. One, it was an agreement between sovereign entities saying that you can occupy space as long as we're able to retain our rights to hunt, fish, and gather as we see fit. The tribe can pass a law today and say that there is no more spearing and fishing, but, you know, that's our customs, that's our way of life, that's how we do things, and a different perspective on it. So it's more along the lines that people were doing something different and some people didn't like it.
So in the beginning, you were talking about the relationship between humans and fish. And so tell me more about that and your understanding of what you're doing when you're fishing. And even like the first time that you fish with a spear, what can you recall about that moment?
So the first time I fished with a spear, I was out with my mom's boyfriend and a couple of the uncles. So, you know, we use our family terms loosely, you know, our uncles and relatives, mm-hmm. right? So I was out there spearing, and they said, you'll know when it's time to take them. You know, and there I was, you know, seemingly failing, right, missing. But those weren't the ones that were giving them to me, as I come to understand it. When I finally got one, I felt it, the fish felt it, and then I got them and brought them in the boat. And that was, you know, a really personal thing between me and that particular fish at the time.
Describe what you felt.
I felt uplifted. I felt a connection to ancestors. I felt a connection to my people, the money dude, the spirits. And yeah, I felt built up.
In the last segment, the last interview that I did, I was just talking with the DNR Outreach Network Coordinator, Benji Cohn, about programs that teach people how to fish. But what are some programs specifically aimed at Indigenous Minnesotans, particularly Indigenous youth, to teach them about fishing and its history?
Yeah, so there's cultural revitalization going on. And, you know, with Anishinaabe people, it's more than fishing. The fishing is a part of a whole, and fishing is a component of it. And like I take my sons out. I take my sons out fishing. They've been spearing now for quite a while. They'll come out, but they haven't been able to get a fish until a few years ago. So now all I do is drive the boat. And tonight I'm taking a couple of their friends out. You know, they play football and basketball, and now it's baseball season. Now I'm taking a couple of their friends out with us tonight to go spearing. I share the story that I heard when I was digging more into it. What more do I need to know? How do I make sense of it? And elder ones told me that a long time ago that the Anishinaabe, a lot of stories start out with the Anishinaabe people being so pitiful, but, you know, this is no different. Anishinaabe were very pitiful. The Creator was having great compassion for them, didn't want to see them suffering, so he was going to remove them from the physical world. The animals who Anishinaabe lived without in the wilderness heard about that, and they approached the Creator and asked, is there a way that we can save our Anishinaabe? And the Creator said, you know, the Anishinaabe need help with life. Bamadizuin, they need help with life energy. The animals agreed, well, can we give them some of ours? And the Creator said, yeah, you can, but if you do that, you can no longer live together. The animals agreed under one condition, that the Anishinaabe never take more than what they need, and the animals would, you know, forever in perpetuity give the Anishinaabe life. So when we go out get fish, the fish are one of the animals that are tied to that agreement. So where they're honoring their part of the agreement, and they honor us by giving us them.
So Bradley, when you talk about taking your sons and their friends out on a boat to go fishing, how do they behave? I mean, do they have the patience for it? You know, you mentioned that they play other sports. Are they attentive? Are they happy to be there with you?
Oh yeah, they must be. So remember, I didn't feel that feeling until I was later on in life, like 20 years old. I started bringing them out, you know, and there's time milestones for Anishinaabe's life, and puberty is one of the big ones. Getting them out there before puberty, we're still connected really strongly to the spirit world, so they're able to feel something when I brought them out there. Coincidentally, right around the time they started changing to young men was when they were able to then be providers of our nation, right? So they're into it. They're ready to go. And they share that information with their friends, which the Anishinaabe spirit guides them out there, and they're pretty well attentive.
And so again, you mentioned cultural revitalization. So there are efforts within the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources to educate folks about indigenous Minnesotans and their ties to fishing.
We're working on that. I've been with the Minnesota DNR now a little over 2 years. I started in January 2020, and we put together a team here, a lot of great people here at the Minnesota DNR. We put together a team here called the Tribal Relations Working Team, a lot of great people from each division and each region. And we're trying to figure out ways, like, how do we get information to DNR staff? How do we get more information out to the tribes? So we got a good, strong headwind here now, and we're starting to tackle some of those projects.
Bradley Harrington, thank you for your time. I've enjoyed talking with you. Bradley E. Harrington is a tribal liaison for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, talking to us about fishing and the history of fishing here in our state. Thank you, Bradley.
Miigwech.
Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.